And now for something completely different.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Let's do it.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. With you till 3 on this Tuesday, with plenty to get to over the next few hours. Coming up, a big win for Lamar Jackson on Monday Night Football last night. What does it mean for the AFC? What does it mean for the Kansas City Chiefs? Plus, the Atlanta Braves, one win closer to the NLCS, and today they go for the jugular. Why in baseball all you need is a seat at the table? Is patience wearing thin already with Sam Darnold and the Panthers? Plus, don't dance on the grave of Alabama just yet. We'll get to our Tuesday top 10 as well. I'll let you know where I was right, where I was wrong, and a whole lot more over the next few hours. You can join the conversation throughout the afternoon, 843-721-9500. You can always text the show, 843-608-1734. Get to us on Twitter, at Morrow Middays. On Facebook, at ESPN Charleston. Via email, studio at kirkmanbroadcasting.com. Or online at charlestonsportsradio.com. With you till 3 here on a Tuesday afternoon with plenty to do over the next few hours. Joe's on the steel wheels as always, and we got plenty to do here on a Tuesday. Let me start with this. Let's dive right in with Monday Night Football last night and the Baltimore Ravens. Coming up a little bit later on, I'll let you know where I've been right and where I've been wrong over the past week, mostly in the football world. But I've been very critical of Lamar Jackson and his inability to lead a team back, his inability to be successful when forced to almost exclusively have to throw the football. Right? When they become one-sided, when that offense is forced to have to throw the football because they're trailing. Now, granted, the Colts are missing multiple defensive backs, not a great defense at the moment. You're at home, long week, but nonetheless, the performance put together last night by Lamar Jackson was phenomenal. And it was something that I've been waiting and many others have been waiting to see. And Lamar Jackson, remember, go back to the offseason over the summer and the storyline, you know, everyone was saying, oh, these teams, they're going to figure out Lamar. And Lamar took that personally. And he said, you know, defenses won't be able to figure me out. And it became a whole thing this summer, a whole source of debate. Can Lamar Jackson continue to be successful? Are NFL teams going to figure him out? Well, when you play like he did last night, it's going to be very challenging to try to slow that down. Only 6 incompletions despite throwing the football 43 times, had almost 450 passing yards, 4 touchdowns, not to mention the plays he made on the ground as well. He had almost all of their yards last night. All but 24 yards of offense. He was a one-man team. And not only that, but he led them back. That's the most impressive part. That is, they fell behind in the second half, down 22-3, down 19 with 18 minutes to go. And you knew at that point, they're going to have to throw it. And yet Lamar still had great success. The best success he's had throwing the football. The Colts had a 94% chance of winning that game when they led by as many as they did. And yet here came Baltimore, forcing overtime and then winning in overtime. And it was how they did it. The 2 touchdown drives in the fourth quarter, and then on top of it, the 2-point conversions as well to Mark Andrews. Lamar looked excellent. He looked like that quarterback that many have been waiting to see, myself included. You know, like, yeah, sure, he can run, he can make plays, he can play with a lead. All quarterbacks can. It's what we've discussed with Sam Darnold. Darnold looks great in Carolina. The first 3 weeks, he only played with a lead, never trailed. Last 2 weeks when trailing, he's got 4 interceptions. It's like, oh, yep, there's the Darnold from the Jets when they were always playing from behind. Every quarterback can play with a lead. You hand the football off, you make a couple of easy throws. You manage the clock and the score. Just don't blow it. Just don't turn the football over. right? Just coast at that point. But how can you do as a quarterback when you're down by three scores in the second half and you have to drop back and throw every time? And last night, Lamar was excellent. In fact, he became the first quarterback to have over 40 pass attempts in a game and complete over 85% of them. There have been, I know these are a lot of numbers at you, but there have been over 4,000 individual games in NFL history where a quarterback has attempted over 40 pass attempts. 4,017 games, including last night. And in those 4,000, Lamar Jackson is the only one to complete over 85% of those passes. It was the most efficient, statistically, the most efficient night we've seen from a quarterback when throwing that much in NFL history. Quarterback rating of 141, led the team back, wins it in overtime. Big-time win for the Ravens, and most importantly, a big-time win for Lamar. For all the doubters, like myself, I'm eating crow this morning. Now, can he do this consistently? We'll see, but he did it last night. It was the largest comeback for Lamar Jackson. One of the few times the Ravens have come back to win a game when just trailing at halftime. One of the few times he was able to erase a second-half deficit in his career, and he did it in a big way. Down 19 with, at one point, 16 minutes to go. Forced overtime and won. Big-time win for Lamar and the Ravens. In the first half of that game, into the third quarter, they fall behind 22-3. You think, oh, man, what a bust this is. Because you go back and you look at the Ravens' season so far, they're 4-1, but they had that win against the Lions with a record-setting field goal that hit off the crossbar, and you think, like, eh, you know, that was a little fortunate. They had the win against the Chiefs where Kansas City fumbled while trying to run out the clock, and then the Ravens went and won by one on another last-second field goal, and you think, like, that's kind of fortunate. They beat the Broncos last week when Teddy Bridgewater got injured mid-game and Denver only scored 7 points, and you think, like, that's kind of fortunate. Right? So the Ravens are 3-1, but with some breaks going their way. And last night they fall behind 22-3, and I was thinking, you know what? Maybe this Ravens team is a little fraudulent. And then they came roaring back and won. And the Colts are not a great team. They're 1-4 themselves. But it's not easy in the NFL to erase a 19-point deficit in the final 16 minutes when the other team knows you have to just throw every time. And what Lamar Jackson did last night was impressive. It was the best performance of his career. And it goes a long way in the face of the doubters, really like myself over years past. Which takes me to this. What does this mean for the AFC and specifically the Kansas City Chiefs? Because the Chiefs won the AFC last year. They were the favorite this year. They have Patrick Mahomes. We just pencil them in the Super Bowl every year. We expected them to get right back this season. And yet, best case scenario right now for the Chiefs who are under 500, best case scenario, you could say they're the fifth best team in the AFC. And maybe that is even a stretch. But I would certainly put the Ravens, after what we saw last night, certainly the Bills, as well as the Browns and the Chargers, ahead of the Chiefs. And what may be most damning for Kansas City, it's not just that they're under 500, not just that there's a handful of teams now that are better than them currently in the AFC, but it's also how those teams got there. Right? Like the Baltimore Ravens, Lamar had never beaten Patrick Mahomes. And even if it was just mental, like that was a big hurdle to get over. That the team you were chasing, you can never beat them. Lamar didn't play great against the Chiefs, and then guess what? They beat them and did so on Sunday Night Football in front of the whole nation. All right, that's like pulling the pants down of the bully at school in front of the whole school. You pants him in front of the whole school, and he's incredibly embarrassed. You beat the Chiefs on Sunday Night Football. You got your white whale and did it in really one of the biggest stages. And then the Bills, this past Sunday night, same idea. Went to Kansas City, Sunday Night Football. The Bills lost to them in the AFC title game last year, and they came back and whooped them at home Sunday night in front of the nation. Beat them by 20. Wasn't even close. Right, they were the far superior team. And that's the most concerning part. It's kind of like LSU football. It's not just that you're losing if you're LSU since winning the national championship. It's that you're down 28 to Kentucky. And you see, like, well, not only are they losing, it's not like they're losing a close game to Alabama. No, we're seeing the big gap here and the teams that are beating LSU that makes it most concerning. If you told me Ed Orgeron was 500 since the national championship, but there were a lot of one-possession games and losing to ranked teams, like, okay, I get it. And you expect them to take a little step back, but at least they're still close. No, instead, he's losing to Kentucky, and they're losing to, like, you know, Mississippi State, and they're losing to these teams, Arkansas, that they should never lose to. Or they're getting blown out, and it's like, ooh, that should never happen to LSU football, even if they don't have Joe Burrow and that incredible offense from 2 years ago. Similar to the Chiefs. Like, okay, it's one thing if you lose, But I don't. If you lose now to the Bills and the Ravens, those were the two teams you were holding off for the last couple of years. Those were the two teams that even when they had success, they couldn't compete with you. You'd still put them in their place. And say, yeah, you know, you're having a good year, but we're the Kansas City Chiefs. We have Patrick Mahomes. And that's no longer the case. And they're under 500 now. At best, fifth best team in the AFC. You could probably make an argument for some others. And I think there are a couple of things at play when we look at the Chiefs. Number one, it's hard to keep the band together either after a Super Bowl appearance or two, or also having to pay some guys. Patrick Mahomes was on his rookie deal. Now he's getting some good money. You have to pay some of the other players on that team as well. And look at that defense. That defense is terrible. There's probably two guys on that defense you would realistically want. Like if there was an expansion draft in the NFL and a new team came in, they put a team in whatever, in Toronto, and they're drafting from other teams' rosters, and they looked at the Chiefs' defense, they probably said, like, yeah, there are really only two guys there we'd actually be interested in. It's not a talented defense. It's not a great defense. We saw in the Super Bowl last year the Chiefs when they had issues on the offensive line with some injuries and how damning that was for Patrick Mahomes. Now this year, right, when you take away some of those pieces on defense or they had to redo the entire offensive line, you move some guys around, you have to make some budget cuts, even just the slightest changes could have a big impact. But number two, the other thing at play here is just simply that they lost in the Super Bowl last year. And it may not seem like a big thing. They got there. Right? If it wasn't for some injuries, maybe they compete. They were the best team in the AFC. But in the NFL, it's so hard to come back from not just making it to the Super Bowl, but losing in the Super Bowl. Now, for one, the Chiefs had gone to the last two Super Bowls. And only three teams in NFL history have ever gone to three straight Super Bowls. That is incredibly hard to do. The Dolphins of the 70s when they had an undefeated season along the way. The Bills of the early 90s when they had, despite never winning a Super Bowl, one of the greatest dynasties. And then the Patriots, the greatest dynasty we've had. The only three teams and times when we had somebody go to three straight Super Bowls. It's incredibly hard to do. So it was hard to expect them to begin with to get back to the Super Bowl this year. At a certain point, you have to expect some sort of drop-off because it's not often teams go to, you know, they just go Super Bowl, Super Bowl, Super Bowl every year. They win 12 games every season. Sometimes you'll have a little bit of a step back. I think Tom Brady, Belichick, the Patriots have changed our opinions. All right, much like Saban and Alabama and college football, they change how you look at things. We don't appreciate things maybe as much as we did because of what the Patriots were able to accomplish. Every once in a while, yeah, maybe a team takes a step back. Maybe they do struggle. Maybe they win fewer games. It's hard to have that same success at that same level year after year after year. But it's also tough to come back from a loss specifically in the Super Bowl. The Patriots are the only team to get back to the Super Bowl after a loss since the Bills did it 30 years ago. And once again, the Patriots have the greatest quarterback of all time and were the greatest dynasty. It's what makes the Bills so impressive that despite losing, they kept getting back there in the early 90s. It's why I do think they're a dynasty despite ever winning a Super Bowl, ever actually winning one. But the fact that they kept getting back there three straight and losing and keep going back, it's remarkable that a team could continue to do that and bounce back from those demoralizing defeats. We've talked to a few members of those teams here on the show. I can only imagine what it'd be like year after year. You get so close and you keep coming up short and having to come back the next year and be just as good. It's difficult to do. Look at recent teams that have lost in the Super Bowl. The Panthers made it to the Super Bowl a few years ago. They followed up that season with only six wins the next year. And their defense, kind of like the Chiefs, dropped to fourth worst in the league the very next season. The Atlanta Falcons, how have they fared since losing in the Super Bowl and losing in a dramatic way? Not only did they lose, but they coughed up that game. That's tough to move past. And they haven't really been able to do it, at least until making a coaching change this offseason and now trying to move forward. But the Falcons clearly have not been the same team since that Super Bowl loss. Even the Rams. The Rams are having a good year this year. But what did they have to do? They had to go out and get a new quarterback. They lost in the Super Bowl. And after that, Jared Goff went 19-15 with the Rams before they traded him away. Essentially a 500 team. And they said, okay, we have to regroup. This is not working. Right? We've kind of stalled out. We haven't been able to bounce back from that Super Bowl loss. Jared Goff and the Rams scored only 3 points. They come back, play 500 football the next 2 years. We were talking about Jared Goff as an MVP before that Super Bowl. Fast forward, 12 months later, they're talking about getting rid of the guy. 24 months later, they trade him. And they say, we got to go get Matt Stafford. And now with Stafford, that's kind of like turning the page, like the Falcons are trying to do with Arthur Smith. And you put that Super Bowl loss behind you, and they had to go out and get a better quarterback to try to bounce back and get back to a Super Bowl. The 49ers, 10-14 since their Super Bowl loss. They're under 500, struggling again this year. it is hard to not only get back there, but especially get back there when you lose. The only exception is the Patriots of the last 30 years. Because A, they're the greatest dynasty we've seen in all of sports. B, they have the greatest quarterback of all time and the greatest head coach, or at least they did. They had the greatest quarterback of all time and the greatest head coach. And C, the Patriot way. We hear about this all the time. But how often did you see the Patriots make mistakes? Whereas the Chiefs this year, a little sloppy. They lead the league in turnovers. They're fifth in the league in penalties. They have the worst defense statistically that we've ever seen in the NFL right now. This is a sloppy team. They have a head coach in Andy Reid that everybody loves, but not really known as some sort of disciplinary. Right, Bill Belichick is a little tougher. Andy Reid's the big lovable guy. He's got the big belly and the walrus mustache and loves barbecue and wears Hawaiian shirts and everybody loves him and he's a great guy. But you have to really rein in the team, especially after a loss in a Super Bowl like Kansas City suffered a year ago. Because football is tough. We know that. It's demanding. It is a tough sport. Even if you play just in high school, you know how tough it was. Back when they even could do two-a-days. And when you get so close and come up short, right, that's brutal. You work so hard all year, and it's such a physical sport. And you go out there and you put yourself through a car accident every Sunday. And then to get so close and to reach that the pinnacle, the ultimate goal of being in the Super Bowl and all the pizzazz that comes with it, and you prep for 2 weeks and you have the media days and you have the big halftime show and millions of people are watching and you go out there and you lose, you stub your toe. It's tough just mentally coming back from that. It's not like a video game. Oh, you lost a certain level in a video game. You lost to the big boss. You couldn't beat Bowser. It's okay. Just restart. Go back. It's not that hard. You spend a half hour playing on the couch. You can fire the thing back up and give it another try. Or even like a business sale. Right now, you blew a sale. That's okay. You have another one, another business, another meeting coming up this afternoon. Or get back on the phones, make more cold calls. Especially when you're a saleswoman, the motivation can be money. Even if you lose a big sale, you were prepping for it for months, and you sat down with that client, and you put your foot in your mouth, or it just didn't go as well as you thought, and you botched it. That can be tough. It can be tough to get back up on the horse right away afterwards. You could be down in the dumps. Maybe you got to go meet some buddies for some beers that night and try to shake it off. But your motivation is still money. Right? You get paid based off of how well you do, so you better get back on that horse. In the NFL, it's not quite like that. They have contracts. I mean, the contracts are a little bit different in the NFL. Teams can get out of them easily. It's not guaranteed money. But if you talk about, say, a Patrick Mahomes, it's not like, man, I got to go out there and win tomorrow. Otherwise, I can't feed my family. The motivation is a little bit different for a businessman. But this is the Super Bowl, right? With everybody watching. And the moment that, as a kid, you dream of in your bedroom, it's the biggest event in sports, more so than the World Series or the NBA Finals or even March Madness, and you get that close, and you put years of training, and you work 12 months with your team and work hard in the offseason, and it all comes together in a tough season, and you get there, and you come up short. It's hard to bounce back from. We've seen that continuously here in the last couple of years. It's like Newman going for his transfer to Hawaii, right, where the air is so dewy sweet you don't even need to lick the stamps. And then when he doesn't get the transfer, right, and he's down in the dumps, and he's sitting on the couch, and he's not delivering the mail, and he says, did you give up already? He says, I usually do. They didn't give me my transfer. He was down in the, he got so close to the pinnacle, every mailman's dream, to be in Hawaii. And when he didn't get it, it was hard to go back to his paper or his mail route in New York City. Right? He was depressed on the couch. Similar with an NFL team. You get so close to pulling off that ultimate goal, and when you come up short, it can be tough to bounce back the next year. The Chiefs right now are just not a great football team. In fact, Dan Orlovsky was talking about this on ESPN's Get Up, that, as he was saying, the truth hurts. And the truth is, this Chiefs team, despite what they've done the last couple years, right now, they're just not very good.
The truth hurts, but yeah. The truth is a necessity. The Chiefs are a bad football team right now. Now, what are the things that we say when it comes to bad teams? We say, well, too many penalties. Right now, their offense has the fifth most penalties in football. Too many turnovers. You touched on it, Greeny. They got 11 turnovers. That's tied with the Jaguars in the NFL, and they can't stop anyone on defense. Worst scoring defense in the NFL. So to put it into context, they give up 7.1 yards per play on defense. The 2000 Rams are considered the greatest offense in the history of the NFL. That's the greatest show on turf. They average 7.0. So this defense gives up more yards per play than the greatest offense in the history of the NFL did. I mean, that is bad. The Chiefs are a bad football team. And until they fix those things that we notoriously align with bad football teams, they will keep being a bad football team.
Orlovsky on Get Up talking about the Chiefs. Kansas City Right now, they are playing like a bad football team. Lead the league in turnovers, fifth most penalties, worst defense statistically we've ever seen, and last night was another example of, at least for the time being, another team in the AFC passing them by. A big win for the Ravens, and at best, the Chiefs are just the fifth best team in their own conference. They got to the Super Bowl, won. They came back, got to the next Super Bowl. And when you lose, it's a little bit different. And things change. And when you pay your big stars, it can be tough to keep around those little pieces that help you get there. Don't count the Chiefs out just yet. Not as long as they have Patrick Mahomes. But right now, this certainly is far from the same team we've seen the last couple of years. And I think those are the things that are at play. Coming up, the Atlanta Braves will try to punch their ticket to the NLCS this afternoon. We'll get to that next. Why it's important just to get a seat at the table in the Major League Baseball postseason. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
Now back to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Coming up, the Braves going for the win today to try to advance to the NLCS, and why it's important in baseball just to get a seat at the table. Get to that here in the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. The Braves hope tonight is the night as they try to finish up this series at home. 5:15 first pitch on our sister station and also on TBS tonight. Game 4 of the NLDS. Braves lead the Brewers 2-1. As they got that big win yesterday. And the Morrow Midday Show is brought to you by Baker Roofing. They have been in business for over 100 years. They're one of the largest, most recognized roofing contractors in the U.S. They provide residential and commercial roofing, and in 1915, Baker Roofing Company was founded on the promise of always good work. So give our friend Matt Johnson, general manager of Baker Roofing Charleston, a call, or head on over to bakerroofing.com for more information. You can check out their incredible history or see all the different roofing types that are available online at bakerroofing.com. Over 100 years of always good work, Baker Roofing, bringing you the Morrow Midday Show each and every day. Well, the Braves won yesterday 3-0 against the Brewers to take a 2-1 lead. Now, as I shared on the show yesterday, over at least the past decade, there hasn't been a huge difference for the teams that do win Game 3 in a tied series. It gives them a 54% chance of winning the rest of the series. But if you're the Braves, of course, you like these chances now that you have two opportunities to win one, and you're at home today. The Red Sox closed out their series yesterday. I came in today. I have my Red Sox shirt on, and Brenda at the front desk said, you're just gonna keep wearing all your team shirts. And I said, as long as they keep winning. But she figured me out. It was the Vikings yesterday. It's been the Red Sox otherwise every other day since the playoffs have begun. That's my whole wardrobe. I have band shirts, band T-shirts, and a bunch of sports shirts. That's about it. And as long as my teams win, I will represent. And the Red Sox got a big win yesterday. In just a moment, we'll get into why it's important in Major League Baseball just to get a seat at the table, much like the Atlanta Braves. But the Braves get that big win yesterday and now go for the win of the series today, trying to knock out the Brewers and doing so with Charlie Morton on short rest. And I like this idea. Now, Morton is about to turn 38 next month. He's pitched on 3 days rest twice in his entire career. They're using him on short rest today. Pitched game one on Friday, coming back on 3 days today. Twice in his career, he's pitched on 3 games rest. Once was his rookie season. It's the only time that he has started on short rest. And that was 13 years ago. The only other time was in the postseason. He came out of the bullpen in game seven of, oh no, pardon me. It was game seven of the World Series. He pitched in game four as a starter when the Astros played the Dodgers in the 2017 World Series, pitched in game four, got the start, and threw 76 pitches, came back 3 days later and actually got the win in relief in Game 7 to win the World Series and threw 52 pitches. He's working on 3 days rest today, having thrown just over 80 pitches in his last start. Maybe a little bit of a bold move. We have an old starting pitcher. You do have the lead. You don't need to be overly aggressive, but I like it if I'm the Braves. Don't let the series go back to Milwaukee. Try to finish it off now and get ready for the NLCS. And while you may be concerned about a near 38-year-old on short rest for the first time in 13 years, you have Ian Anderson in Game 5 as well, or Max Fried, rather, in Game 5, who they're going to use on a short rest. And Morton, as mentioned, didn't throw a ton of pitches 3 days ago. So you hope he still has something left. He'll be at home. You hope the home crowd will help. And take the chance. Don't play for tomorrow, or in this case, it would be Thursday. And don't play to go back to Milwaukee and think like, well, if we don't win this one, that's okay. That's why there's Game 5. No, go for the win. Be aggressive. I spent part of yesterday's show talking about the NFL coaches who were not aggressive enough. In fact, Frank Reich last night had to apologize in his post-game press conference after the Colts blew that game for, as he said, being too conservative in the fourth quarter. We see it every week. I don't understand it in the NFL. Now, these coaches get all conservative in the fourth quarter and let games slip away. The Browns made a dumb decision. The Vikings made a bunch of dumb decisions. The Colts made dumb decisions last night, cost them a game. So, yeah, if I'm the Braves, I'm going to be aggressive. So let's go for it. Morton on short rest, let's give it a try. If it doesn't work out, okay, then the fallback is Game 5, and you got a pretty good pitcher working in that game as well. We'll see what Charlie Morton has tonight, or really this evening, 5 o'clock, 5:15 first pitch, as the Braves try to finish off the Brewers. And that's why it's important just to have a seat at the table in the baseball postseason. The Red Sox finished their series last night. The Braves are one win away from advancing. The Astros are one win away from advancing. If you go back and you look, the Red Sox finished the year 38-38. They played 500 baseball down the stretch. They get into the postseason. They beat the Yankees in the wild card game. And then they take 3 out of 4 from the Tampa Bay Rays, who had 100 wins this year. Best record in the AL. The Atlanta Braves did not reach 500 or get over 500 until August 5th. And they go into the postseason with the worst record of all playoff teams. In fact, there are teams left out of the playoffs that have a better record than the Atlanta Braves did. And yet, here we are again. They're in the driver's seat, one win away from advancing. Even the Astros, who had a really good year, but the Astros did not finish the season strong. Final 2 months, the Astros were only 4 games over .500, 31-27. And then come playoff time, bats are red hot, and they have a 2-1 lead over the White Sox trying to advance. Baseball's a little bit different. That you do just want that seat at the table. We talked about this last week with Corey McCartney when we were previewing the Braves Brewers. And I asked him, you know, what should the perspective be of a Braves fan? What should expectations be? Are you pleased to just get here? And he kind of touched on this idea that, you know, in baseball, you could be excited. You just want an opportunity. Just get to the playoffs. Who knows what could happen? And the Braves did that. Did they have a great season? No, not necessarily. Bad division. Only the 12th most wins in baseball despite playing in a bad division. Under 500 for the first half of the season. But they did find a way to get to the playoffs. Who knows what happens from here? And now as we sit here today, without putting the cart ahead of the horse, the Braves are one game away from trying to get back to the NLCS. You know, in the NBA, it doesn't really matter if you have a seat at the table. It's always the top teams. The NBA is star-driven. Teams so you could take the regular season off at times so you don't get a true look at them. Once you get to the playoffs, it's those best teams. It's the same teams every year. It's the top three, maybe four seeds. They're the teams to look out for. In the NBA, you don't think like, oh, we just have to get there. Let's get that 8 seed, and then who knows what will happen. No, we know what's going to happen. You're going to get a gentleman's sweep if you're the 8th seed. You know, in the NFL, it's somewhere in between the NBA and Major League Baseball. In the NFL, it can be about playing the best football at the right time, getting hot. Right, like the Tampa Bay Buccaneers were 7-5 last year and then had their bye week and then didn't lose again. But for the first two-thirds of that season, we were looking at the Bucs like, eh, you know, kind of just an average team. I mean, you knew they had potential and they had talent and they have Tom Brady, but they weren't putting it all together just yet. And then they ran the table. Think back to the Giants when they won their 2 Super Bowls. Right? I mean, they just got hot. 1 year, they were barely made the playoffs. And then they played great football. They were the best team at the right time. Major League Baseball is then the next notch up. If NBA is at the bottom and the NFL is in the middle, Major League Baseball is at the top of just get in and let's see what happens. Because teams can get hot. Pitchers can get on a roll. When you're in a short series, you only need 3 pitchers. You don't need a 5-man rotation. It's why I thought the Brewers would be such a tough matchup for the Braves. Because instead of using 5 guys, you use these 3 great pitchers over and over again. And you have to deal with the same 3 great starters all 5 games. All 3 of them should get Cy Young votes. And the Brewers, I thought, even with their offense, would be a really tough team in a short series. But the Braves have done a good job handling them to this point. But it's a little bit different in baseball. The Rays and the Dodgers, right? The Rays have the most wins in the AL. They're already done. The Dodgers had the second most wins in baseball. Granted, they're playing the team, the only other team with more wins than them, but on paper they have the most talented roster, and yet they're on the brink of elimination. I think back to the 2007 Rockies, who were 500 going into September, and then got red hot and made it all the way to the World Series. In baseball, it's a little different, because as they say, your momentum is only as good as your next day's starting pitcher. Teams can get hot, pitchers can get hot, your pitching staff can benefit from being a shorter series, you have more guys in the bullpen on the playoff roster. You only need to rely on three of those five starters, right? So you minimize the chances of having a poor performance, not having to count on your fourth and fifth starter for 60 of your games during a regular season. Now you don't even use them. It's a little bit different in the playoffs. And the other thing, too, is just that guys step up in the postseason. There are certain players out there that just play better. I've gone through this before where it's like Dante's Inferno at the different levels. It's the same thing in clutchness, where at the very top you have the greatest players to ever do it, and they get even better. Michael Jordan, Mariano Rivera, great in the regular season, get even better in the postseason. And then the next rung, the next ring, the next level, however you want to describe it, are great players that become all-time great in the playoffs. Fernando Valenzuela, Curt Schilling, they were already good pitchers, but then they get even better. They become greats in the postseason. Then the next level are great players that just continue to be great, like Kobe and Derek Jeter. And then you get to the next level of guys that aren't that great, but they're really clutch in the playoffs. Eli Manning, in baseball, Luis Soho, right? And that's what you see this year. The Red Sox just won their series. Kike Hernandez and Kyle Schwarber, two guys they went out and got this year, who, for whatever reason, play great in the postseason, better than they do in the regular season, and they both have big-time series. Those are things that you just can't account for. And the Red Sox were a wild-card team, but they had a couple of clutch performers. The Braves with Jock Peterson, a great postseason performer. They got him midseason. It's something that you may not consider on the roster. You compare rosters, oh, you know, the Brewers, they got the better team than the Brewers. But you can't account for how somebody will handle those big moments. The clutchness. How big somebody will step up. Whether it's Kike, Schwarber, Jock Peterson, guys that are kind of average players. Luis Soho is the classic example from 20 years ago for the Yankees. Always had big hits, especially against the Mets in the Subway Series. These average players become playoff time. Right, they take it to another level, and they make your team even better. Baseball is the different sport. The NBA, it doesn't matter. You can get a seat at the table. You're not going to do anything. The NFL, kind of. We're seeing lately it's becoming harder and harder for the wild card teams, and especially now that the top seed is the only team that gets a bye, they're at an even greater advantage. Right, the NFL, it's a little bit of a toss-up. You can get hot like the Giants and make a run to the Super Bowl, but it doesn't happen that often. In baseball, you may not win the World Series, but you can make some noise just by getting a hot pitcher, having a player play over their head in the postseason, getting hot at the right time, and winning a series maybe you shouldn't. The Red Sox beat the Rays. The Braves are one win away from eliminating the Brewers. Maybe the Astros finish off the White Sox despite playing 500 ball the last 2 months. The Dodgers may not make it out of the first round. Just get there in baseball, and who knows what will happen. Coming up, is patience already wearing thin with Sam Darnold in Carolina? We'll get to that, plus some thoughts on Alabama. We'll have our Tuesday Top 10 a little bit later on. Plenty to do. It's the Moore Midday Show. Right here on ESPN Radio.
Spend lunch with Luke.
Attention campers, lunch has been canceled today due to lack of hustle. Deal with it.
On the Morrow Midday Show.
Coming up, could patience already be wearing thin with Sam Darnold and the Carolina Panthers? Get to that here on the Moore Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. If you ever miss anything from the show, you can always catch it on demand. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcasts. As we get ready for tonight, for the Atlanta Braves and the Milwaukee Brewers. Braves trying to advance to the NLCS once again and do so with the Brewers. Right now, we've had some great series in the playoffs so far, and of course, most of them are still going on. The Red Sox, the first team to advance. But it does feel kind of like a shame that the Dodgers Giants is just the NLDS five-game series first round. And the Braves Brewers, it almost feels like that's the consolation, right? And the Dodgers Giants is the championship for at least the National League. And then we're going to take a team, either the Braves or the Brewers, and take them and put them forward against the winner of the Giants-Dodgers. It just feels like it doesn't match up. Now, with that said, watch. Whoever wins the Braves or the Brewers is probably going to go beat either the Giants or the Dodgers anyways. But it just feels like these are the two better matchups, more evenly matched on each side. And then you're going to take, you know, this the winner of this matchup that's a little bit lower than the other one, on paper at least, Giants or Dodgers versus the Braves or Brewers, I think is certainly much more of a mismatch than what we currently have in the first round of the NLDS. But as I said, all you need is a seat at the table. The Braves will try to finish things off tonight, and then who knows what happens. Their pitching staff is pitching really well the second half of the season and into the playoffs. You go up against the Giants or the Dodgers. Who knows? You never know in a baseball. It's a long series. You get a couple of bats that get hot. You rely on a couple of good arms in the playoffs, some experience. You make a couple of good manager decisions. You never know what could happen. Braves will try to finish off the Brewers tonight. You can always join the conversation, 843-721-9500, to give us a call. Let's go to the phones because Super Dave is with us. Dave, what's going on? How are you?
You know what kind of month you don't ever have with Halloween. So anything can happen. The Brewers could come back, beat the Braves, then end up finishing the series out, see whoever comes out.
Yes. You never know. So what do you think is going to happen? Do you think the Braves win today and finish the series once and for all?
Uh-uh.
No?
I think they're going to let the foot off the gas. And for some reason, I just think Milwaukee's not going to throw it all away in one game. And they're going to come back and they're going to kind of extend it out. So we'll have to see and wait who does what, you know?
So you think we're headed towards a fifth game in this series?
Yeah.
And then who would you give the edge to in Game 5? Do you think the Braves are in trouble in this series still?
Yeah.
Uh-oh.
They would be in trouble still because you never know in baseball who's going to let the foot off the gas.
That's right.
That's all I'm saying.
All right.
Because
so
I've seen it before. Mm-hmm. And then they looked like they was going to get wind, and all of a sudden, boom, they let the false gas, the other team wins.
Yeah,
we
saw it last year for the Braves. So you're warning Braves fans, don't get too excited just yet. This thing may not be over.
Exactly.
They may be in for a disappointment, is what you're telling
exactly.
me.
Exactly. And the weather's got a factor in it, too, because of how much arm factor, because the cool weather's starting to come in Sunday, I believe. So.
Uh-oh.
But I don't know what kind of factor it's going to have with the pitchers. So sometimes if they pitch a lot of pitches, and all of a sudden they got to give out, and then they got to do a relief pitcher. So that's, you know, you got all kinds of factors now into it.
Yes, certainly. All right, so the Braves better beware, Braves. Be aware that this thing, they may be in for a disappointment. Have you mentioned Halloween, Dave. Have you made the shift over? Have you been watching the scary movies yet?
Not yet. I haven't they started showing them yet.
Oh, no.
I haven't seen the Gleam what's his name, when he does Halloween, because he loves doing Halloween movies.
Ah,
so usually about this time of month, they start coming in.
Yes.
You know?
That's right. That's right.
Talking about the old classics.
Uh-huh.
You got Frankenstein.
Of course.
And you got actually Boris Karloff and Dracula.
Yep.
Different ones, so.
Oh, yeah. Tis the season.
The spooky ones that's really going to be coming up, too, that's to be a distraction.
Yeah.
Of sports coming in.
That's right.
You know?
Yeah. Sorry, the Westerners are going to have to take a back seat for a few weeks for your spooky movies instead. Appreciate it, Super Dave. Oh, the Braves may be in trouble, according to Super Dave. Now, you don't have to go back too far to remember, you know, maybe getting ahead of yourself a little bit, as last year they blew a 3-1 lead with a trip to the World Series on the line against the Dodgers. I'm not putting the Braves into the next round just yet. But you do have a lead. You're at home today against the Brewers. You got to finish this thing off, and that's why I like the idea of going with Charlie Morton on short rest. Don't take it back to Milwaukee. Don't go to a Game 5. Finish it off now. By the way, today, speaking of, I guess, bad Braves memories, since we were just talking about the postseason last year, on this date in 1997, this was when LeVon Hernandez for the Marlins struck out 15 Braves in that complete game win in the NLCS when Eric Gregg helped him out with that huge strike zone. So Braves fans, of course, remember it well. It's always referenced, but today's the anniversary of that pitching performance for LeVon Hernandez. Didn't they make like a 30-for-30 on that performance alone around Hernandez's season? But yeah, thank you, Eric Gregg. Today is the anniversary of the Braves watching a lot of wide strike threes against LeVon Hernandez in the NLCS. So you got that going for you. Hopefully that's not a bad omen, that coming up later on with a chance to advance in the playoffs, it's the anniversary of that notorious performance for Hernandez against the Braves in 97. And, of course, the Marlins went on to win the World Series that year. So we'll see how things go later on this afternoon. Maybe they'll have some sort of their own Eric Gregg behind the plate to help out Charlie Morton today. We'll see. We'll wrap up Hour 1 when we come back. We'll get to the Sam Darnold stuff coming up. But also, we saw him this past weekend, the first ever 8-year college football player. I want to touch on this when we come back. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Coming up, the first ever 8-year college football player. We'll break it down here in the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio as we wrap up Hour 1 on this Tuesday. If you ever miss anything from the show, catch it on demand. Just search ESPN Radio Charleston, however you listen to your podcast. Coming up, I'll let you know where I've been right or wrong over the past week. So the Citadel played this past Saturday against ETSU, clearly the best team in the conference. They're 6-0 for the first time since 1969. ETSU has a really good team this year, and they beat the Bulldogs. The Citadel hung around for about 2.5, 3 quarters. ETSU pulled away late, and the final score, you know, maybe looks a little bit worse than at least half of that performance. The Citadel hung in there, but ETSU is just a better team. They're the best team in the conference right now. And I mentioned this on the broadcast, and then we talked about this. Lee Glaze, my broadcast partner, and myself on the way home. But Jared Foulkes is a linebacker for ETSU, and he is in his 8th season of college football. And I bring this up because we mentioned on the broadcast, we were talking about it, it's so unique, and then I saw Chris Lowe write an article for ESPN.com this morning about him, so I figured why not get into this because I find this really interesting. 8 years. He was the defensive player of the year in the Southern Conference last year. You could understand why, because he was in his 7th season and 25 years old. He's currently 26. Playing against, in certain cases, you know, 18-year-olds in the Southern Conference. And at a certain point, look, he's had a really good season last year. He's off to a good year this year. Maybe he does turn himself into an NFL player. Remember Brandon Whedon played minor league baseball, then went to Oklahoma State, and he got drafted. He was the oldest player to be drafted in the first round at 28 years old by the NFL. So he's a 28-year-old rookie. And he didn't really work out in the NFL for a number of different reasons. You know, he was drafted by the Cleveland Browns, and they were terrible. But, folks, if he turns himself into an NFL player, I guess it'd be worthwhile. I mean, it certainly would be worthwhile. But otherwise, if not, if there is no future career for football, I get that he's doing, you know, like what he loves, continuing to play football. If there is no future, then beyond college, you know, there's no more football, so you might as well play as long as you can. But it's almost like, kind of like Animal House or any of these other, Van Wilder in these movies. Like, at a certain point, right, it's almost time to, like, move on and kind of become an adult. You're 26 years old and you're still in college. Like, eh. That's kind of what other people, when I was 26 years old, right, I was already working in my industry for about 5 years. College was a lot of fun. I would love to spend 8 years in college looking back on it. But when you look around and you're, you know, like rooming with 20-year-olds, I'm sure he's not living in the dorms. You know, when you get to like 26, I don't know, isn't it kind of time to move forward?
So kind of like Tommy Boy.
Yeah, know? Right,
hey,
yeah.
Hey, a lot of people go to college for 7 years. Yes, to call doctors.
Yes, that's a good example. And, you know, he's like in the frat house breaking tables in the beginning of the movie and everything. It's like, you know, it's like townies. You have your townies in high school. People that just hang around town and hang around the high school. It's like, buddy, you graduated high school already, right? Go do something else. And in college, yeah, those kids that stay there for so many years, I don't know, at a certain point, and I didn't mean to bring this all up to knock the kid.
Because, well, he's not exactly a kid.
No, that's true.
He's 26.
That's true. I mean, he's almost my age. Yeah, you know, my whole point, I kind of went off on a tangent here. My whole point in bringing this all up wasn't to try to put him down, like, what are you doing at 26 years old? But at a certain point, I mean, isn't that kind of odd? I also saw North Texas started a quarterback this past Saturday who's 28, because he, too, was a minor league baseball player first with the Yankees. And he made his first career start for North Texas on Saturday at 28 years old.
Who was the quarterback at Florida State that played minor league baseball in the 90s and then went and played football for them? And I think he won the Heisman. This is around the turn of the millennium.
I don't know. I'd have to get back to you. But for this kid at North Texas, if he stays 4 years, he graduates when he's 32, then it's like, okay, now what? I just graduated college. I'm 32 years old. How do you even relate? Is it even still fun if you're 30 years old in college? Can you relate to the kids 10 years younger than you? I don't know.
Well, South Carolina had a receiver who retired out of the military and played at 39 and 40 years old.
Yeah, Tim Frisbee, right?
Pops.
Pops, as they call him, yes. Yeah, I don't know. But more on this, because I think it's a really interesting story for Jared Folks. We'll get to the actual stuff next.